But I think when we look at all the evidence that comes to us from various fields of scientific investigation, we're going to see that it's more reasonable to say that a human being is a combination of three things. Ordinary matter, yes, that's part of what a human being is. But beyond that, there's a subtle mind element, and beyond that, there's the element of consciousness. And when I speak of mind and consciousness as elements, I don't mean temporary byproducts of bioelectrical activity right. going on in the brain. I mean that mind is an element, consciousness is an element, just as much as gold and silver are elements. Now, they may be a little more subtle, but they're nevertheless real elements, not simply temporary byproducts of activity going on in the brain. And there's a whole body of scientific evidence that supports that. Now, just as in the case of the archaeological evidence that I talk about in the book Forbidden Archaeology, there's been a lot of what I call knowledge filtration going on. There's a lot of evidence that scientists have collected about these topics that really doesn't get the attention it deserves. So that when many people hear, well, matter, mind, and consciousness, or body, mind, spirit, or something like that, they think, well, that's just sort of some new age jargon, but that's because they're not really aware of the scientific evidence that backs up these claims.
And you know what? They've probably never even wanted to investigate when they hear these things.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, George, because I think people are very interested in these things, but they turn to the wrong authorities, really, for their answers. They're accustomed to get the answers to their questions about these things from the people that are now dominant in the education system and in the scientific world. But I think the growth of radio programs like yours shows that a lot of people are starting to understand that you've got to turn to some alternative sources of knowledge if you're really going to get close to the truth, and that, you know, you're not necessarily going to get the whole truth from your science textbook in your high school or college classroom, or, you know, by listening to the sorts of scientists you're going to see on PBS or things like that. I think a lot of people are interested in these things. That's what I find all over the world. People all over the world are very interested.
What about mainstream science, though? Are they interested when they hear this, or do they scoff at you?
Well, you know, even the world of mainstream science is changing. It's not as monolithic as it used to be. For example, I was recently invited to give a special talk at the annual meeting of the Society for the Anthropology of Consciousness, which is a division of the American Association of Anthropologists. And so it's a mainstream scientific organization. But still, they were interested to hear what I had to say about these topics, because consciousness is something that this particular group of scientists, anthropologists, are interested in. And I went over some of the evidence with them, and they found it really quite interesting. Of course, many of them are also interested in these same kinds of evidence, but, you know, the tendency has been to dismiss it. But still, I think if ideas are going to change, the very first thing is that scientists have to be willing to listen to alternatives. And I think many in the scientific world are interested. I've had a lot of experience myself in that. For example, a couple of years ago, I was invited to give a talk at the Department of Nuclear Physics of the main science university in Budapest in Hungary. Mm-hmm. And the audience was about 100 professors of physics and graduate students of physics. So I went through some of this evidence for the mind element. For example, I told them about the case of Marie and Pierre Curie, who are two of the most famous physicists in the world, You know, they were husband and wife. They both got Nobel Prizes in physics for their work in discovering radium.
Mm-hmm.
And you read about that in every physics textbook. What you don't read in the physics textbook is that they were heavily involved in psychical research. You know, they were doing experiments with mediums, people with psychokinetic abilities, and actually the Curies were part of a group of about 20 prominent European scientists who were doing this kind of research in Paris early in the 20th century. And this whole group, which included five Nobel Prize winners, including the Curies, did 2 years of research with a medium named Eusebia Palladino, she was from Italy. And these experiments took place in the Psychology Institute in Paris. And on one occasion, you know, Marie Curie was there controlling the medium, and other scientists were also there. And in the middle of the laboratory, in broad daylight, under carefully controlled experimental conditions, Pierre Curie, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist, said that a large table was floating right in the middle of the room. And this wasn't like one of these scenes that, you know, you often see when people want to talk about this stuff in a derogatory way,
right,
like in some dark living room and who knows what's going on. This was an actual scientific experiment that took place in a scientific institution in Paris with some of the top experimental scientists in the world carefully controlling all the factors. And under those conditions, this woman was able to produce these macro psychokinetic effects. And I mean, to me, it's evidence for a mind element that can act on ordinary matter in ways that we really can't explain, you know, by our current laws of physics. So I went through a lot of these cases, and at the end I was wondering, what are these physicists going to say?
Cool. And what was the look on their faces while you were speaking to them?
Well, you know, as I said, it's these, even in the world of mainstream science, it's not monolithic. You've got some people who are going to be very dismissive of this sort of thing, you know, your psychop sort of people. And for the listeners who don't know what psychop is, that's a society of skeptics that wants to, you know, just dismiss everything that goes against, you know, their particular way of looking at things. So you've got that kind of person there. But you also have other kinds of people in the world of science who have more open minds, and at least they're willing to give serious consideration to things like this. So one of the professors of physics walked up to me after the talk and said, you know, I'm very glad you gave this talk, because by day I'm doing plasma physics. You know, that's the physics of superheated gases. And he said, but privately at night I'm doing experiments in telepathy.